Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from SIRI, an Alaska Native corporation with operations and investments spanning 5 continents, 45 states, and 2 U.S. territories.
For a family of 5, that's over $16,000. That's going to help pay for a lot of things.
Eligible Alaskans are getting over $3,200 in PFD payouts this year. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, September 8th. Good evening, I'm Wesley Early. Also tonight, fuel tank inspections in Bethel become more and more important.
Aging infrastructure combined with the changing climate is continuing to be a problem.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Are you ready to start accelerating your child's future through education? The Alaska Native Science and Engineering Program is expanding its reach with new opportunities in Juneau and Southeast Alaska. With ANSEP's Acceleration Academy, high school students can earn college credit, save thousands of dollars in college costs, and experience fun, hands-on learning. ANSEP, it's a better way to learn. Learn more and enroll at ansep.net/acceleration. This message sponsored by ANSEP.
This year's Alaska Permanent Fund dividend payout is $3,284. That includes a $650 energy relief check approved by the legislature earlier this year. Governor Mike Dunleavy announced the final amount during a press conference this afternoon at the Three Bears grocery store in Palmer.
For a family of 5, that's over $16,000. That's going to help pay for a lot of things, everything from fuel, food, medical bills, car repairs, rent, you name it, it's going to help.
Eligible Alaskans who applied online and opted for direct deposit should start receiving their money on September 20th. Alaskans who filed paper applications or requested a paper check should start receiving the dividend the week of October 3rd. Adjusting for inflation, this year's dividend total is among the highest in the state's history. If you don't adjust for inflation, it's the highest total, which Dunleavy highlighted during his news conference. Meanwhile, Representative-elect Mary Peltola touched down in Bethel Wednesday evening to spend a few nights in her hometown before she heads to Washington, D.C. Peltola will serve as Alaska's sole U.S. representative and become the first Alaska Native in Congress when she's sworn in next Tuesday. KYUK's Nina Kravinsky was at the Bethel airport where supporters gathered to welcome Peltola.
A small crowd circled Peltola next to the baggage carousel at the Alaska Airlines terminal. Alaska's soon-to-be congresswoman pulled a green roller bag behind her as she hugged family and friends and took photos with supporters. Some had signs to welcome Peltola home. Kathy Hansen's homemade poster board sign simply said, "Rep Peltola."
I am so excited that we have actually elected a U.S. representative who is from here, and she's a woman. Oh my gosh. And she's Alaska Native.
Other supporters, like Alice Jung, just happened to be catching flights, but were excited to be swept into the welcoming committee, even if they weren't there specifically to greet Peltola.
It's just good to see Alaska Native in there, you know, and she knows all our problems in the bush.
Gracie Nelson was also at the airport to catch a flight out of town, and she and her two nieces hopped into a group picture with Peltola and a crowd of supporters, family, and friends.
Just so proud of her. She's come along so well for herself, and she's done so much, I feel like. Everybody's going for her.
Okay, I'm going to try not to cry.
Bev Hoffman helped organize the event. She's known Peltola since the congresswoman-elect was a child, and she did cry last week when the election results were announced.
I yelled and screamed and jumped up and down, and I just was overwhelmed with joy.
Peltola's family members were at the airport to greet her too, including her sister, Margaret Fitka, who Peltola wrapped in a long hug.
We're just so excited and proud of her to just put herself out there and just run for her seat, and to see her win, it's just awesome.
Anna Hoffman stood near Fitka. Hoffman's the president and CEO of Bethel Native Corporation and the co-chair of the Alaska Federation of Natives. She's also a close friend of Peltola's.
I think she's just ran a great campaign. She's And throughout, she's just really stayed true to her values. And so I have confidence that that will continue to carry through to her success.
Peltola will hold an event at 5:30 this evening at the Cultural Center in Bethel. Once she's sworn in, Peltola will serve the last 4 months of late Congressman Don Young's term. She's running in November to serve the seat's next full 2-year term. At the Bethel Airport, I'm Nina Kravinsky.
The Matanuska-Susitna Borough School District will no longer allow transgender students to use communal bathrooms and locker rooms that match their gender identity. Last night, the school board suspended a policy that allowed transgender students to use bathrooms and locker rooms of their choice. The board voted 5-1 to suspend the policy. The board's policy committee suggested the change after a parent contacted the board about a transgender girl changing in a high school girl's locker room. Dozens of people attended last night's meeting. All those who spoke during public comment were in favor of suspending the policy. Some parents, like Cher Morrison, were concerned about girl safety and privacy.
I'm appalled at the district's transgender student policy. This policy takes my daughter's rights from her in order to give male students extra privileges.
Others cited religious beliefs and denied that gender identity could be different than biological sex. School board member Dwight Probasco was the only no vote. He said he wanted to ensure that transgender students had an alternative, such as a gender-neutral bathroom.
Probably less than 2% of our student population are transgender children. And we have to protect them also. So I will be voting no on this suspension tonight.
Under the new policy, transgender students can still opt to use individual bathrooms rather than communal ones. Meanwhile, the U.S. Coast Guard recently completed a series of fuel tank safety inspections in communities across the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. In the face of climate change, these checks are becoming all the more important as the land beneath these tanks melts. KYUK's Will McCarthy has more.
In large part, villages were found to be following best practices to prevent oil spills. Most of the issues that inspectors identified were administrative, like having a written plan for how to respond to a potential spill. Here's Coast Guard Petty Officer Nate Littlejohn.
Staying in compliance with things like paperwork may seem extremely tedious, and it is, but it's really not about the paperwork. It's about getting together, talking about how you would respond to a spill in your community. What do you need to do? What actions do you need to take?
The Coast Guard conducts semi-annual checks of bulk fuel tanks in Bethel and surrounding communities. In their most recent deployment during the last week of August, Coast Guard and EPA inspectors visited 24 communities. The investigators checked to make sure that fuel storage facilities have the right containment measures in place, that there's a system to respond to a spill, and that communities have appropriate equipment to do so. These fail-safes are becoming increasingly important as the land that fuel tanks sit on becomes more unstable. Climate change is creating a series of long-term problems that threaten the security of fuel tanks and could cause spills down the line. As the region warms and permafrost begins to melt, the foundation upon which many of these fuel storage tanks sit have begun to slowly sink. Here's Petty Officer Littlejohn again.
In some instances, we're seeing that some of these tanks are kind of sitting at an angle due to the thawing of that permafrost. So that's certainly a concern. The aging infrastructure combined with the changing climate is continuing to be a problem. And we're absolutely going to see more spills if a solution isn't provided.
As the foundations of these storage facilities shift, Littlejohn says it's all the more important for communities to inspect them regularly, work to keep them level, and develop design adaptations that take climate change and permafrost thaw into account. The region is not equipped to handle a catastrophic spill. If that were to happen, it wouldn't just take an environmental toll. Littlejohn says it would also immediately put human lives at risk.
If thousands of gallons of heating oil are lost in the dead of winter, we have to come up with a solution for how that heating oil is going to be replaced. How are these folks going to heat their homes? That's a big concern there.
The Coast Guard intends to return for another round of inspections next year. In Bethel, I'm Will McCarthy.
The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency now has until December 2nd to decide whether or not to enact restrictions that would block plans for the Pebble Mine. The agency says the new deadline will help ensure consideration of public comments. The comment period ended Tuesday. Earlier this year, the agency released a proposal to bar discharges of dredged or fill material into U.S. waters within the mine site footprint proposed by the Pebble Limited Partnership, the developer pursuing the mine. On Wednesday, the Pebble Partnership CEO suggested any veto of the project by EPA would likely be contested in court. Mine opponents have been pressing the agency to provide protections against large-scale mining in the region. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, the dog mushing world mourns the loss of Lance Mackey.
He fought a lot of battles, and he always came out on top, and it finally caught up with him. But we're going to miss him.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Invasive plants and animals threaten Alaska's waters and can spread to new locations by hitching a ride. Anyone can help stop aquatic hitchhikers by remembering to clean boots, boats, and trailer to remove plants, animals, and mud. Drain bilge, ballast, and buckets before leaving the area, and dry equipment before using it in a new body of water. Learn more at stopaquatichitchhikers.org. This message sponsored by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
Alaska mushing icon and four-time Iditarod champion Lance Mackey has died at the age of 52. Mackey's comeback kennel announced on its Facebook page that Mackey passed away last night, quote, after a long battle with cancer. He had survived a bout with throat cancer 20 years ago, but was re-diagnosed last year. Fellow mushers said today they'll remember Mackey for his humor, his grit, and his kindness. He has long been a fan favorite and fixture at sled dog races. Jeff King, also a four-time Iditarod winner, says the mushing community around the world will mourn Mackey's passing.
Was a very unique individual with tremendous drive and talent, and really an icon for the sport and for those with illnesses. And, you know, he fought a lot of battles, and he always came out on top, and it finally caught up with him. But we're going to miss him.
Mackey won his first 1,000-mile sled dog race in 2005 when he competed in the Yukon Quest. He went on to win it the next 3 years, and he's the only musher to win the Iditarod 4 years in a row. He became the only musher to win both races in the same year in 2007, a feat many thought impossible, and then he did it again the next year. King says Mackey was devoted to his dogs. He remembers watching Mackey step outside at the Takotna checkpoint during the 2006 Iditarod.
His team just sprang to its feet, and every one of the dogs was pointed at him with this perked ear love and appreciation and excitement to see Lance. And he was great to his dogs. They trusted him, and that way he got them to do incredible things.
Mackey is survived by his two young children. The Kenai Peninsula Borough paid $267,000 to settle a pair of workplace complaints alleging bullying and discrimination by Charlie Pierce, the borough's departing manager and a Republican candidate for governor. The Alaska Beacon reports only one of the settlements had been previously disclosed to the public. Copies of the settlements were first published by Juno radio station KINY after a public records request seeking copies of all settlements involving Pierce. The previously undisclosed settlement involved a $117,000 payment to former Kenai Borough Human Resources Director Kim Sainer, who left the borough last year. According to the text of the settlement, Sainer wrote a complaint to the borough's lead attorney and Pierce's chief of staff in December, alleging, quote, illegal acts related to Sainer's employment with the borough. The other settlement involves $150,000 paid to Sandra Stormy Brown, the borough's former human resources director. Brown sued the borough in 2019, alleging that she was fired by Pierce after she told him that she had been diagnosed with a fatal case of cancer. The borough settled the lawsuit later that year after both sides went through a mediation process. Meanwhile, former Kenai Peninsula Borough Mayor Mike Navarre will return to his role temporarily while the borough readies for a special election to fill the now vacant seat. The borough assembly appointed Navarre to the role Tuesday night, less than 2 weeks after current borough mayor Charlie Pierce announced he was resigning at the end of September to focus on his campaign for governor. KDLL's Sabine Pooks has more.
Navarre's been borough mayor twice before, from 1996 to 1999, and then again from 2011 to 2017. He'll serve as mayor until the borough holds a special election to finish out Pierce's term through fall 2023. Navarre says he has no plans to run for another partial or full term, but he says he wants to help the borough through its leadership transition, which he says will be especially important during the upcoming budget process. He'll start on the job October 1st.
And I guess what I want people to know is I see this as a caretaker role. It's a unique situation for the borough in that the mayor has resigned to run for a higher office. There's going to be a time that the borough needs to have consistent management and keep things settled down going forward.
The interim appointment wasn't a given. Borough Attorney Sean Kelly said in a legal memo last week, the assembly had a few paths forward to temporarily fill the seat before a special election. One of the options he laid out was for the assembly to appoint an interim mayor. Kelly said there's no part of state or borough code that dictates how an interim appointment would have to be made. Some assembly members said they'd like to see candidates apply for the seat. Assemblymember Tyson Cox put forward DeVar's name at the meeting this week. He said in a committee meeting that with just a few months until a special election, it was important to get the process underway. And he said Navarre's name came up repeatedly when he spoke to constituents.
It's a tough job for us to do. We have appointments to make sometimes, and this is one of those tough times, and I think we just need to make some choices.
Navarre represented the Central Kenai Peninsula in the Alaska Legislature for 11 years as a Democrat and served as commissioner for the Alaska Department of Commerce. He's a business owner in Kenai and today is on the boards of the Rasmussen Foundation and Kenai Peninsula Boys and Girls Club. He says it will be good to have someone with knowledge of the budget process in the interim seat in particular, since that process picks up right after the new year.
When I came into the job in 1996, it was overwhelming. And it's not just the learning curve where you have to learn all that goes on in the different departments and the nuances within the service areas and things like that, but it's also that you never know what direction you're going to get hit from.
The borough doesn't yet have a date for a special election, and the borough hasn't yet put out a notice or deadline for candidates to file. On Tuesday, Navarre said former Senator Peter Michicki and Soldotna City Council member Linda Farnsworth Hutchings, both of Soldotna, had expressed interest in running for the seat. In Kenai, I'm Sabine Pooks.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Northern Air Cargo, providing year-round transportation of all types of freight from oversized equipment to small packages for commercial or residential. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956. Everyone knows eating fruits and veggies promotes a long and healthy life. It's important to make every bite count. Alaskans are lucky to have greens and berries from the land, as well as fresh, frozen, and canned. When it comes to living a long and healthy life, remember, every bite counts. This message sponsored by USDA SNAP Ed.
Another rocket launch is scheduled for Kodiak's Pacific Spaceport Complex next week. It comes on the heels of a successful launch back in March and as Alaska Aerospace eyes expanding operations at its facility. But as KMXT's Kirsten Dobroth reports, some residents say that growth is shutting out locals' access to the area.
Alaska Aerospace's Chief Executive Officer Milton Keeter will be in Kodiak this week. Keeter will be taking questions from borough assembly members during their work session on Thursday regarding road closures near the company's Pacific Spaceport complex on Narrow Cape. The facility is located near several popular recreation areas, including Fossil Beach, at the end of the island's road system. A flurry of social media posts on Kodiak community Facebook pages dating back to late spring say the closures are happening outside of launch windows and often without notice. Dave Conrad is the Kodiak Island Borough's interim manager. He says the borough has also fielded calls about the closures.
Their concern is that they are of the belief that the Alaska Aerospace is not honoring the spaceport master plan that was developed and worked on in 2019 and 2020.
That master plan was developed with input from Alaska Aerospace, members of the public, and the borough. It encompasses 10 years of growth at the facility and outlines, quote, improved public notification procedures about road closures around the complex, and a list of foreseeable times that launches and road closures would occur. In July and August, Alaska Aerospace filed requests with the state to expand road closures to encompass more of the area surrounding the spaceport complex, effectively cutting off public access at the switchbacks before popular areas like Surfers Beach during launch windows and certain facility operations. That last part caught the attention of borough assembly members at their last regular meeting earlier this month. Kodiak Borough Mayor Bill Roberts.
You drive out the road not knowing that there's all of a sudden going to be a closed road. You got your family with you. You're going to Fossil Beach. We've got to come to an agreement with these people on that. And this thing about stopping people at the switchbacks, no. People are pulling their hair out over that.
Both Roberts and Conrad sent letters to the commissioner of DOT late last week, stating the assembly's, quote, deep concerns regarding the lack of information from Alaska Aerospace on the closures near the complex. In response, Conrad says officials from ADOT plan to review the closures when they visit Kodiak and meet with borough officials at the end of the month. Although not everyone is unhappy with the spaceport complex, and many of the complaints come from the same individuals, according to Conrad. When reached for comment, Alaska Aerospace CEO Keeter said he wants to work with the community and mitigate any concerns about the complex. He also said there's been some misinformation spread about the company's plans for expansion, particularly on social media, and he's looking forward to building connections with the borough assembly. Alaska Aerospace's next launch window at Kodiak's Pacific Spaceport Complex is scheduled for September 12th to 13th. A list of road, water, and air closures is available at the company's website. In Kodiak, I'm Kirsten Dobrath.
Community organizations across Southeast Alaska will receive more than $12 million in federal grants. The funding is from the USDA and is part of $25 million towards a new program called Southeast Alaska Sustainability Strategy. Coast Alaska's Angela Denning reports.
$12.4 million in funds are being given to three regional groups to partner with Southeast communities and encourage sustainable economies. The nonprofit business developer, Spruce Root, was awarded $6.4 million from the Forest Service for community-based forestry projects throughout the region. The regional tribal government, Central Council of Thlinkit and Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska, is receiving nearly $3 million from rural development. That's for local programs in the region involving food security and environmental work. The Economic Development Nonprofit Southeast Conference is receiving just over $3 million for economic diversification through community projects. The Southeast Conference will also work with Spruce Root and Thlinkit and Haida to set up partnerships. Ralph Wolf directs Spruce Root's program, Sustainable Southeast Partnership, which works with communities throughout the region. He says the funds are a new direction for the USDA.
Thinking outside of their normal application processes and kind of an approach similar to what we take is the community out. So making sure to ask the community what their wants and needs are and figuring out ways that they can use their resources to help achieve those goals.
He says the new regional sustainability strategy, being called SAS, uses more of a grassroots approach, looking at what solutions are already recognized on the local level.
It's a great way for the USDA to take a different approach on equity. And I really think that it amplifies the collaboration and partnership that it's taken for all of these communities to survive, to continue building and re-strengthening ourselves to be more sustainable and more in sync with nature and all of our partners throughout the region.
The federal funds also include smaller direct grants to communities for projects like a wood pellet mill in Ketchikan, expanding the 4-H youth program in Sitka, a snowpack monitoring and deer strategy program in Hoonah, and a program in CAKE to train residents to monitor resources. In a joint press release with the regional recipients, Thlinkit and Haida says the funding agreements are an example of USDA's commitment to its federal trust responsibilities, saying that it, quote, recognizes the critical role of tribes in the co-stewardship of our lands and waters and sustainability of our communities, end quote. Southeast Conference Executive Director Robert Venables called USDA's partnership approach a game-changing shift. The Southeast Alaska Sustainability Strategy was first announced by the USDA last July. The program's priorities include ending large-scale timber sales on the Tongass National Forest, reinstituting the 2001 roadless rule that the Trump administration repealed, and working with regional tribes for short and long-term investments. Reporting in Petersburg, I'm Angela Denning.
Ketchikan and Metlakatla both receive federal money to get electric buses on the road. In Metlakatla, the bus will run to the ferry terminal 14 miles out of town, a first for the community. In Ketchikan, three electric buses could be on the road by 2024. KRBD's Reagan Miller reports.
Gas was $5.55 a gallon last time Keolani Booth checked, and that's an improvement. With prices like that, he says it's getting even harder to make the 28-mile round trip to Metlakatla's ferry terminal.
It's a hardship for, we got 14 miles of road out here, and there's a lot of people that are on foot that don't have cars.
He says a $400,000 Federal Transit Administration grant for the purchase of an electric bus could change that. Booth sits on Metlakatla's governing tribal council and is the board chair of the local power utility. He says there's never been a bus dedicated to running to the terminal. Many people either have to walk or ask for rides. Booth says the bus will be virtually free.
You know, we have a lot of people that are on a fixed income. A big portion of the community is elderly. So we take all those things, we consider all of that, and try to fit within those people's budgets.
Metlakatla Mayor Albert Smith says he isn't quite sure when the buses are due to arrive. Metlakatla Indian community is still in the process of claiming the grant money. Two ferries come to Metlakatla each day. In between trips to the terminal, Booth says the bus will help the community's elders get around. And in Ketchikan, a $4.2 million grant will put three electric buses on the road. Transit Director Kyan Reeve says they'll probably hit the streets in late 2024. The new buses will come from the same manufacturer as the borough's current diesel buses. Reeve says that could prevent a lot of problems, similar to those reported when Juno's buses switched to electric.
But what they did is introduced a bus that was built from the ground up that was very new, that didn't use any of the same parts as their current fleet, and also didn't have a track record. So that was a very young bus company that developed their bus. And so the issues weren't all with the drive systems, the battery systems, those type of things. A lot of the issues were just simple bus issues.
Ketchikan's buses are from the manufacturer Gillig. The transit department's manager, Stephanie Bouchon, says that 80% of the parts in the new buses are identical to current buses. She says that will be a cost saver even for simple repairs like windshield wipers. She says the grant also covers the charging equipment for the buses.
We're going to have to upgrade transformers. There's a bunch of work that'll need to be done in that realm.
Reeve says that the bus's batteries have twice as much power as other electric buses. He thinks they'll do best on Ketchikan's urban and hilly routes. Neither Ketchikan or Metlakatla have yet placed orders for the new buses. In Ketchikan, a little more work has to be done to determine that the buses are the right choice for Ketchikan. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Reagan Miller.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org and wherever you get your podcasts. We had reports tonight from Nina Kravinsky and Will McCarthy in Bethel, Chris Clint in Anchorage, Sabine Pooks in Kenai, Kirsten Dobreth in Kodiak, Angela Denning in Petersburg, and Reagan Miller in Ketchikan. If you want to send us a news tip, question, or comment, email us at news@alaskapublic.org. Our audio engineer is Dave Emmert, Katie Anastas is our producer, and I'm Wesley Early. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Alaska Air Cargo, providing Gold Streak Express shipping for urgent deliveries throughout Alaska, with connections to more than 100 destinations in the lower 48 and Hawaii. More at alaskacargo.com.
And by
ConocoPhillips, investing in oil exploration and production and working to create economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, unlocking Alaska's energy resources.
This is statewide news on Alaska Public Media.